The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Secondly, we're in a situation where we have put together, and you guys did it for our administration, the President Obama's administration before this. We have put together, I think, the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in the history of American politics.
Folks, we got a lot of work to do. I don't only need you to get me elected. I need you once I'm elected.
People would ask me, knowing what you know now, do you wish like you had a third term? And I used to say, you know what? If I could make an arrangement where I had a stand-in, a front man or front woman, and they had an earpiece in, and I was just in my basement in my sweats, looking through the stuff, and then I could sort of deliver the lines, but somebody else was doing all the talking and ceremony. Wow. I'd be fine with that.
When we disagree, it'll be just like, so far, it's been just like when Barack and I did. It's in private. She'll say, I think we should do A, B, C, or D. And I'll say, I like A, don't like B and C. Mm-hmm. And let's go, okay. But I told Barack, if I reach something where there's a fundamental disagreement we have based on a moral principle, I'll develop some disease and say I have to resign.
Well, President-elect Joe Biden.
I love the last one. President-elect Joe Obama. That's a reporter letting it slip. He knows the game that's being played. The election steal. They're just a week away from completing the steal. And yet, that's a subject that you can't get into. Facebook just announced that anything with stop the steal, they're going to remove it. They're going to delete it. This is in the United States of America. If you talk about stopping the steal, it's got to be nixed. It's got to be censored. You can't even bring it up. You can't even bring up the subject. They tell you what is appropriate. The big tech oligarchs, they tell you what's appropriate and what's inappropriate. We thank you for joining us on today's show. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. And as I announced yesterday, make sure that you remember, it looks like we've already got quite a few of our viewers shifting over to thetrumpet.com /live page. You can go to the Trumpet in case there's ever any trouble with YouTube, and we're expecting that there probably will be, because they can't handle the truth. They cannot handle the truth. Satan, as I've explained before, he hates being exposed. And heading into the hearing last week, January 6th, the Electoral College certification, he was about to be exposed, and that exposure is still coming. It's still happening. No matter what big tech does to try to blot it out, God is going to expose the devil and his evil activities. He's going to shine light on it. And this is what the devil's doing everything that he can to prevent. So as we transition over to establishing our own platform, our own live feed, don't forget about thetrumpet.com, as you can see there at the lower third on your screen if you're watching it on YouTube. Don't forget about thetrumpet.com/live. That'll take you to the live broadcast every single morning. Well, because of the violence last week, the facts evidently have changed. Because of the violence at the Capitol, and it was certainly an embarrassing and shameful moment for the United States. But because of that, like I say, you cannot even talk. You cannot even talk about voter irregularities You can't even bring it up. And as I've noted, that changed on a dime. I mean, as soon as the senators and the congressmen came back into the chambers late in the night on November 6th, on into November 7th, well, you had some flip-flop right there, right then and there. Well, because of this violence, we're not even going to contest. We're not even going to talk about the voter irregularities. Talk radio. Cumulus Media, that's a broadcasting company that has all kinds of radio stations that carry talk radio hosts like Mark Levin, Ben Shapiro, Dan Bongino. And they announced yesterday that no more talk about the election steal, no more talk about voter fraud, or else you might be fired. This is from the Washington Post. We need to help induce national calm now. That's Brian Phillips, executive vice president of content for Cumulus. He wrote this in an internal memo. Cumulus and its syndication arm, Westwood One. You've probably heard little jingles to Westwood One or Cumulus Broadcasting. This is from the memo. It says, "We will not tolerate any suggestion that the election has not ended. We won't tolerate it." It says the election has been resolved and there are no alternate acceptable paths. And listen to this. The memo adds, if you transgress this policy, if you transgress it, you can expect to separate from the company immediately. If you're guilty of now people are very concerned about sin and transgression. And what is the number one sin in the nation right now? To even bring up the election steal. That's transgression number one. That's the first and great commandment. As far as big tech and the major media are concerned, you either comply or, like Parler, you die. What did Parler do, by the way? What did Parler do? The apps were taken away from Apple and Google, and then Amazon deplatformed them. And Parler's going to be down for quite a while, we now know. What did they do? Parler caused January the 6th? I thought it was President Trump. Is it President Trump and Parler now? Is it both of them? So Parler's down, totally. And their CEO, John Mates, he said yesterday, most people with enough servers to host us have shut their doors to our company. The pressure is so intense. The doors have to be shut. You know, Victor Davis Hanson makes the point, and I'll get to his article if we have time later on in this segment. But he makes the point that squashing dissent, this is really important for an oncoming Biden administration, because they've got so many radical plans, and you can only imagine the level of dissent, adding states to the union, packing the court, bringing in more liberal senators once you add D.C. and Puerto Rico as U.S. states. These are radical, radical items on the agenda. And it's going to be important, as Victor Davis Hanson brings out, it's going to be important for a new administration like Biden's to be able to just eliminate voices of dissent, to just blot out any dissent so that they can ramrod their agenda right through, so that they can force it down the throats of Americans. They don't want any dissent. Rush Limbaugh, I read, I didn't hear it, but evidently he said yesterday that what they're doing right now, what they're doing to conservatives on social media, is the same thing that they did on November 3rd. They're blotting out the voices of conservatives. They're blotting out, in truth, the voices of the majority, just like they did on November 3rd, just like they did with the election steal. This is from the Wall Street Journal. Save the Constitution from big tech. Well, the Wall Street Journal, they pretty much abandoned President Trump. And now they're talking about saving the Constitution. Maybe they should have held on for a little bit longer and defended the president who was fighting for the Constitution. It says here, using a combination of statutory inducements and regulatory threats, Congress has co-opted Silicon Valley to do through the back door what government cannot directly accomplish under the Constitution. See, these are just arms of the radical leftist government. The communist wing of the U.S. government, big tech. Michelle Obama sends the letter on Thursday. Big tech responds the very next day. The very next day. It says Section 230 is the carrot, and there's also a stick. Congressional Democrats have repeatedly made explicit threats to social media giants if they fail to censor speech those lawmakers disfavored. So they've just got to censor what's coming from the conservative wing. It's okay. It's okay for the Ayatollah to have a Twitter feed. You just can't have the president of the United States on Twitter. It's okay for radical terrorists abroad to have an account on Twitter, but not Donald Trump. Not the president of the United States. That's where we are in the new America. The affliction is bitter. Bitter affliction. There's no help. God surveying the scene. What will God do? You know about the prophecy in 2 Kings 14. You know about Amos 7. It says here in the journal, there's more at stake than free speech. Suppression of dissent breeds terror. The answer to last week's horror should be to open more channels of dialogue, not to close them off. If disaffected Americans no longer have an outlet to be heard, the siege on Capitol Hill will look like a friendly parley compared with what's to come. So there's the journal at least acknowledging that you can't just shut down the voices of half of America. And in effect, that's what's happening. That's what's happening. And look, the whole world, the world is on board with this for the most part. There is some dissent among world leaders that I think are looking at what Twitter is doing, and they're just shocked. You mean you can just delete 11 years of history from the president of the United States? You can just send that right down the memory hole and everybody applauds that? The French finance minister, he said yesterday, there needs to be public regulation of big online platforms. And then he called for the censorship of one of the threats to democracy, this digital oligarchy, as he calls it. The president of Mexico, I don't like anybody being censored or taken away from the right to post a message on Twitter or Facebook. I don't agree with that. I don't accept that. That's the leader of Mexico. And he's telling America, I can't believe you're doing away with free speech. Why, that's enshrined in your First Amendment. There's quite a few more. Breitbart has a list of reactions from leaders abroad, even Angela Merkel in Germany. It says here, the chancellor sees the complete closing down of the account of an elected president as problematic. That's from one of her spokesmen. If you end up at a situation where Germany is criticizing you for cracking down on free speech, then you might have gone too far. You might have gone just a little bit too far, do you think? Germany. The Chancellor of Germany. And by the way, Germany, there's an article from Spiked Online about life after Merkel. They've got elections coming up this weekend. None of the candidates seem very very good, to be honest. The article at Spike says the CDU has no vision and no viable successor. So you have this state of, well, there's not really much strong leadership around in Germany. What does that mean? Where is Germany headed? We haven't talked a lot about Germany and the Holy Roman Empire, but be assured, they are central to so many of the end time prophecies to be fulfilled in these last days. But coming back to this attack on the president of the United States, Deutsche Bank and Signature Bank, they've basically cut off Donald Trump and all of his enterprises. They're not going to do business with Donald Trump, this media mogul, this real estate tycoon. They don't want to do business with him, even if it involves multiple millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars. Not interested. Signature Bank of New York. They've closed down two of Donald Trump's personal accounts. This bank, they said, we have never before commented on any political matter and hope to never do so again. But they've got to comment on this. They've got to comment on Donald Trump. They're treating him like they're freezing bank accounts now for the president of the United States, or at least saying, we don't want your business. It's like he's a terrorist. They're treating him like a terrorist. And the terrorists still have Twitter accounts. Isaiah 5, right? Upside down. What's up is down. What's black is white. The Democrats, of course, they're completely immune from this type of intimidation, these kinds of intimidation tactics. Kamala Harris, over the summer, last year, she said protesters should not let up. Did she get punished for that? Did she lose bank accounts? Were her social media accounts suspended? The protesters, and by that she meant rioters, they were burning down the U.S. cities. They were destroying individual businesses. And she said, don't let up, keep it going. You keep it going, she said. That was the woman running for vice president of the United States. Some would say president. And what did she say to the rioters? Keep it up. And what did she say to those who were arrested and put in jail? Not nearly enough of them were, but what did she say to those who were? Hang on, we'll bail you out. We'll get you out of jail. We'll release you from captivity. You don't deserve to be in there. Representative Ayanna Pressley, she said, there needs to be unrest in the streets as long as there's unrest in our lives. That's what they were saying a few months ago. This needs to continue. Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, I just don't even know why there aren't uprisings all over the country. She wanted uprisings all over the country. And was she penalized? Was she sanctioned? Did she lose financial accounts? Did she lose her contracts with ice cream companies? Did she lose any of these things? Oh, no. Oh, no. They prospered. They prospered during the year 2020 for stoking that kind of violence. They won accounts. They won popularity. There was a story, I forget where, it talked about all of the connections between Joe Biden's administration, the administration that he's building, and their connections, all these people that he's put in place, their connections with big tech. And you can go down the list. The director of Facebook's regulatory team, that's the incoming White House staff director. Twitter's head of global policy communications. She's the director of press and the spokesman for the National Security Council. Former developer for Facebook, David Recordon. He's going to be the director of tech at the Office of Management and Administration. Former program manager for Facebook. He's going to be a high-ranking deputy. Former Facebook board members, COVID-19 czar. Tony Blinken advised Facebook through the consultancy from West Exec. He's going to be Biden's Secretary of State. And on it goes. Last month, there was an article in Reuters. Big tech stealth push to influence the Biden administration. They're just one and the same. They're totally in bed together. And that's why when Michelle Obama, and it's the Obamas, they're pulling the strings. They're operating the puppet. And so that's why when the Obamas write to big tech responds. They're one and the same. You can look at an article we had just last year. I believe it was in October of 2019. The Obama Media Empire Strikes Back. It is an empire. The Obama Media Empire. They've got the upper hand. It says here, this is from Revolver, real coups, talking about a coup. Where is the real coup happen? Yesterday I said, you know, where are the real authoritarian tactics? Where are the real tyrants and fascists? This says, where's the real coup? It says, real coups are not clumsy mob attacks adjacent to lawmakers. Real coups, above all, are about control. Listen to this. Control of communications, control of bureaucracy, and above all, control of military power. And in the past few days, it is President Trump's enemies who have seized control of all of these things. They have control. The radical left, it has control of the big tech. It has control of the media. Look at the narrative that just continues to pound people day in and day out on CNN. Looking at January 6th as if this was the worst moment in American history. Listen to some of these news clips. This is a comedian. He's a comedian, Chris Rock. He was on, I believe, Colbert last night. And listen to him compare. I know he's just meant to be a funny guy, but listen to him. It's not unusual, this comparison between the Black Lives Matter protests last year that went on for 7 months, remember, and then what happened on January 6th. This is clip two.
Black Lives Matter, they had like Apache helicopters. And for this, there was food trucks outside.
Yeah, remember that? Remember last year when the Apache helicopters were out to quell the violence? The violence went on and on and on because there was no crackdown. There was no crackdown. Look at how quickly the FBI has gotten to all of the perpetrators, the trespassers. I mean, the guy that was carrying the lectern, smiling, he's having to now defend himself in court. And again, he shouldn't have trespassed. But Chris Cuomo, last night, he's grilling the lawyers of this guy carrying, I think the lectern might have been from Nancy Pelosi's offices. He's carrying a lectern, okay? A lectern. And listen to Chris Cuomo as he grills the attorneys representing this guy. Clip three.
Now, Dan, you have a very prestigious pedigree. You're a federal prosecutor. You're a federal agent. Everybody has a right to a defense. They don't have a right to you as counsel. Why does this man deserve your level of defense? But I'm saying, why does he deserve your help in this situation? He has no right to your help. What do you know about him that makes you feel that there are redeeming characteristics to who he is and what he did, sir?
Dan, why are you representing him? He's an extremist. He stole the lectern, Dan. Dan, we need to abandon him. He deserves no representation, or if he does, it should just be a no-name lawyer. Certainly not someone like you. You should know better, Dan. He doesn't deserve to be defended. And, of course, the lawyers were like, look, this was a one-time thing with him. This is a family man. He's never committed a crime. He got caught up into the frenzy, and he went in there and he grabbed hold of a lectern. Imagine, if you will, all of those looters last summer that took off with the there was one with the bulldozer ramming in the side of the store, and then the people streaming in and out with cash, with shoes, with TVs, with the stereo systems. Did any of them get prosecuted? Were any of them arrested? A lot of businesses were destroyed. A lot of people lost their livelihoods. Here are these two attorneys, grilled on national TV because they're representing the guy smiling, carrying the lectern. Here's Meghan McCain. She's a Republican. She's on her show saying what ought to happen to these Capitol Hill protesters that breached the perimeter there at the Capitol. Clip four.
I'm not against sending these people to Gitmo, and that may sound extreme. These are domestic terrorists who attacked our own republic. They should be treated the same way we treat Al-Qaeda.
treated the same way we treat Al-Qaeda. Okay, so send them to Gitmo. They're terrorists. They're terrorists. You see how the narrative, carefully controlled by the Obama media empire. Here's the D.C. police chief commenting on the Capitol Hill protests from last week. Clip 8.
I have talked to officers that said who have done two tours in Iraq and said that this was scarier to them than their time in combat.
Scarier than Fallujah, I guess. What happened last week? As I recall, there was just one gunshot victim, and that was one of the protesters gunned down by the Capitol Hill police. Was there even another shot fired? And we hear about the armed insurrection. How many were armed? Because the only one that got shot that I know of was a Trump supporter in the neck, 14-year Army veteran. Shouldn't have trespassed. I've said it over and again. Should have stayed out. Even when the police were inviting you in, should have stayed out. In any event, the exaggerating, that's the narrative that they want you to see. This is the worst ever. And what happened for 7 months last year, it didn't really happen. So just move on from that. What happened on November 3rd? The election steal? Stop the steal. What happened on November the 3rd? It didn't really happen. Just move on. Victor Davis Hanson says, crazy 2020 is dead. Long live crazier 2021. He makes a more accurate comparison between the riots of last summer that went on and on and on, and the protests that got out of control for a few hours last Wednesday. It says here, Biden himself rarely, if ever without exceptions, outright condemned the atrocious violence of Antifa and indeed contextualized it as an idea, a disincarnate entity that apparently could magically also burn and loot. It says, Would that summer candidate Biden had just once said a word on behalf of the victims of Antifa and BLM, more than 700 injured, 700 injured law enforcement officers. Apache helicopters? I don't think so. You had law enforcement kneeling to BLM, and you had 700 law enforcement officers injured. Some of them were just being clubbed and beaten in the streets. Billions of dollars in damage and dozens killed over a summer of hateful violence that also wrecked the lives of thousands of struggling small business owners and their employees. And what happened? He mentions how BLM, they raked in $10 billion in corporate gifts. All of these big companies, the same ones presumably that are penalizing Donald Trump, they just poured billions into the coffers of BLM. BLM came out on top because of those riots. They got what they wanted. They got more endorsements. They were endorsed by the NBA. They were endorsed by the Premier League in the UK. Billions and billions of dollars in support. It says here further on, lawyers who defended Trump were hounded. Well, I'm skipping ahead. Just want to get to the end of this. It says, multimillionaire Michelle Obama, who seems seldom to allow a serious crisis to go to waste, was calling for the complete weaponization of social media and the permanent banning of Trump. A scared Mark Zuckerberg seemed to agree. The multi-billionaire had infused $350 million of his own money into the pre-selected precincts to boost voting turnout in a way the left in the old days would have called the dark money that undermines democracy. Here is big tech helping those precincts that turned the election in the dark of night in the favor of Joe Biden. It's like Rush Limbaugh said, what's happening to us on social media right now is exactly what happened on November the 3rd. The same people. The same criminals. The same kind of theft. The same spirit. It says a day after Michelle Obama's call, Trump coincidentally was banned from Twitter for life. For life. Talks about what Google did. It talks about what Amazon followed and did. It says here, the trillion-dollar social media monopolies on cue from the Obamas and the left are now making the necessary adjustments for a hard left-wing controlled presidency and Congress. On cue, he points out. Correctly so. He's absolutely right about this. On cue from the Obamas. That's the Antiochus administration. And then this point that he makes about the monopoly on information. It says the left will need, he's talking about the impending revolution. That's what he calls an incoming Biden presidency. And all of the radical plans that they have for the Supreme Court, for the Senate. He says the left will need this new monopoly on information as dissent grows. No wonder then, in a few hours of national panic, it took care of the family business, as Michael Corleone once put it. After all, who could be bothered by a plague, stalled state vaccinations, a recession, and a country torn apart by an election that saw 100 million votes cast before Election Day? All of that's in the past. We'll talk in a moment, maybe in the next segment, about how that COVID is a thing of the past now. We're moving on. The election steal is nearly complete, and we've got all of these radical programs to implement. Victor Davis Hanson concludes his piece by just talking about, really, really, the affliction, the bitter affliction in the United States right now, and even things like the national debt, $28 trillion. I was reading an old Trumpet article the other day where it talked about the astronomical debt of $8 trillion. I forget the date of it. $8 trillion today, $28 trillion. $28 trillion, he says at the end. So hang on, it's going to be Mr. Toad's wild, scary ride for all of 2021. You thought 2020 was bad? Well, wait until this, says Victor Davis Hanson. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
I will never quit on my president. I am a Trump Republican because he has done more for this country in 4 years than any of his predecessors. And what I find amazing is that he gave the Republican Party a backbone, and all of a sudden, we have spineless Republicans. I don't want to mention their names. Adam Kinzinger, Chris Christie, Mitch Mulvaney. They have abandoned the president.
He gave the Republican Party a backbone. He showed some courage. And now he's being abandoned. Everybody's turning on this president. Bitter affliction indeed. He's all alone. What will God do? How will God intervene? Andrew Cuomo yesterday. And the president, by the way, was spot on with what he said back during the campaign season. You wait. You wait. Once the election is over, or in this case, finalized, you wait and see what they do with the COVID-19 lockdowns. He gave his State of the State address, Mr. Cuomo did, and he had this to say about the future of New York, clip 6.
We must plan our economic resurgence. We simply cannot stay closed until the vaccine hits critical mass. The cost is too high. We will have nothing left to open. We must reopen the economy, but we must do it smartly and safely.
Smartly and safely. That's exactly the same verbiage that President Trump has used, that President Trump used months ago. We've got to open up. And now, I mean, what changed? You look at the number of cases. Sam sent me a graph this morning. It's worse now in New York than ever. And yet here is the governor of New York. And you know about the history. You know about how he sent COVID-positive patients by the thousands back into nursing homes, which is what caused so many deaths in New York. And then the oppressive lockdown. And it had to continue. Never mind what New Yorkers thought. Never mind what it was doing to New York's economy. And now suddenly he says, hey, we've got to open things up. Right as they feel like it's certain that Biden's going to get in there. And they change their tune. They change their tune. Just like President Trump predicted that they would. Here's more of the positive. Now the positive message that Governor Cuomo is delivering. Clip 5.
But this is a moment that is made for New Yorkers. This will be a moment to reimagine, reinvent, and recreate. Life is about change and growth.
And of course, last year it was about life. If we can save one possible life by shutting down everything, then we've got to do it. That plan has been set aside, and now they move on with more of a state of normalcy, I guess. I've been meaning these last few programs to get into, just as a follow-up to some of the content that we went through last week regarding Moses and Joshua, and this point about just how faithfully Joshua followed in the steps of his predecessor. Even after Moses had died, you see Joshua, a man of faith, a man of action, constantly referring the Israelites back to their forefathers, back to the wisdom and the understanding and the faith of Moses. I'll just take you through a little bit of this history from the book of Joshua. This is Joshua 1. And verse 13, it says, remember, this is Joshua speaking, remember the word which Moses, the servant of the Eternal, commanded you, saying, the Lord your God has given you rest and has given you this land. Joshua told them to remember the words of Moses, to remember the commands of Moses. And this was after Moses had died. How important is it for us to remember those precious words? We refer you back to Herbert Armstrong over and again. He died in 1986. I mean, we're approaching the 35-year anniversary of his death this Saturday, January 16th, 2021. He died on January 16th, 1986. Why would we refer you back to someone that died 35 years ago? Well, think about the prophecies that he expounded upon. Think about what he told us regarding the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. Think about what he told us regarding Germany, the beating heart of Europe, as he called it. Here's Joshua, and they're about to cross into the promised land. God performed another Red Sea parting-like miracle. There's more than one. God parted the waters of the Jordan River as well. And of course, back then, the Jordan River was, I'm sure, a mighty river compared to the little stream that you see in the state of Israel today. So here were these Israelites, millions of them, and God parted the waters of the Jordan River, just like he parted the waters of the Red Sea. And this was God communicating to the Israelites, look, if you're faithful in your support for Joshua and his righteous deeds, the same God who parted the waters of the Red Sea, I'll be there for you to perform stunning miracles, spectacular miracles. It's the same God, after all. It's no problem for God to part the waters of the Red Sea. God is a miracle worker. God is our Father in heaven. God is the creator of all. Joshua 4 and verse 1, it says, and it came to pass when all the people were clean passed over Jordan, that the Eternal spoke unto Joshua. So here's what God said to Joshua. These are the instructions that God gave to Joshua. He said, take you 12 men out of the people, out of every tribe a man, and command you them, saying, take you hence out of the midst of the Jordan, out of the place where the priest's foot stood firm, 12 stones, and you shall carry them over with you, and leave them in the lodging place, where you shall lodge this night. And then Joshua called the 12 men, whom he had prepared of the children of Israel, and out of every tribe. And Joshua said to them, pass over before the ark of the Eternal, your God, in the midst of the Jordan. It says, and take you up every man of you a stone upon his shoulder, according unto the number of the tribes of the children of Israel. So they were to basically to make this monument. God never wanted them to forget this. And it says further on, this is verse 7, when it passed over Jordan, the waters of Jordan were cut off, and these stones shall be for a memorial unto the children of Israel forever. So God wanted them to construct a memorial so that Israelites would never forget their history, so that they would never forget the miracles that God performed. God doesn't want us to forget those. It's so easy to forget. It's so easy to forget the miracles that have backed God's work for these past 31 years. It's so easy to forget about the earth-shaking miracle in the lawsuit, the court case over Mystery of the Ages, happening back in the end of 2002 and, of course, the beginning of 2003. Verse 9 of Joshua 4 says, and Joshua set up 12 stones in the midst of Jordan, in the place where the feet of the priests which bear the Ark of the Covenant stood, and they're there unto this day. So he erected this monument. He wanted us to remember. God wants us to remember. And then it says this, verse 10, for the priests which bear the Ark stood in the midst of Jordan until everything was finished, and the Eternal commanded Joshua to speak unto the people according to all that Moses commanded Joshua, and the people hasted and passed over. So God commanded Joshua to speak according to all that Moses had commanded him. It's a simple game of, not a game, but you understand what I'm getting at. It's like follow the leader. Follow the leader. Look at what was done before you, ahead of your advance. In Malachi's message, my father's book, it says, God commanded Joshua to speak according to all that Moses commanded him. And so we must be careful today to follow Mr. Armstrong's instructions. to follow those instructions from our forebears. Verse 14, it says, on that day, the Eternal magnified Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they feared him, as they feared Moses all the days of his life. See, God magnifies you if you just follow in the example that's been set before us. The Bible talks about the example of Christ. I went through that last week, and that we're to follow in his steps. And if we do that, God highly exalts us. God honors us because he loves that attitude. He loves that mindset. And it's quite contrary to what mindset you see in the world today, particularly in our nations today. These people that come along and they want to do away with everything that happened before them. They want to tear down statues. They want to erase our history. They want to eliminate dissent, as I covered in the first segment. Verse 21, it says, and he spoke unto the children of Israel, saying, when your children shall ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what mean these stones? See, when they ask, and you see where he's going with this, when they ask, you want to be able to tell them. You want to be able to teach them. You want to be able to show them. And no freedom without law. It says God had a family plan for Israel. He wanted Israel to teach their children about their miraculous crossing of the Jordan River. They were instructed to build a monument to this mind-dazzling miracle. It says, then the parents would explain its meaning to their children and relate it to the Red Sea miracle. See, God wanted them to educate and to train and to teach their children. Look at this attitude in Joshua, verse 23. It says, for the Eternal your God dried up the waters of the Jordan from before you until you were passed over, and the Eternal your God, as the Eternal your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up from before us until we were gone over, that all the people of the earth might know the hand of the Eternal, that it is mighty, that you might fear the Eternal your God forever. Fear God forever. You think of the first and great commandment to honor and obey God and to put God above all else on this earth, all else in the universe. And if we've got an example like Moses or anyone else before us where someone did that faithfully, that's an example we want to follow. In Joshua 8, a few pages over, it says here, so Joshua arose and all the people of war to go up against Ai, and Joshua chose out 30,000 men of valor and so on. Verse 18, further on, and Joshua said, and the Lord said to Joshua, I should say, stretch out your spear that is in your hand toward Ai, for I will give it into your hand. And Joshua stretched out the spear that he had in his hand toward the city. And you know about this particular example where there was one in the mix that didn't follow instructions, that didn't follow in the footsteps of Joshua. But Joshua, you know, with Joshua it was different. Verse 35 in this chapter, it says, there was not a word, listen to this, there was not a word of all that Moses commanded, which Joshua read not before all the congregation of Israel with the women and the little ones, and the strangers that were conversant among them. Even the little ones that were just learning to talk. And God reminded them of the words of Moses. He didn't omit one word. And Moses was dead. It would have been easy for Joshua to veer off and to say, well, you know what? Moses is gone. I honor and respected him while he was alive. But, you know, I've got to establish my own role here. He was so faithful, my father wrote in that same booklet, Joshua didn't reject even one word that God taught through Moses. When God sends a man to deliver a message, it's extremely dangerous to reject even one word. Joshua showed us how to follow the ark today. He also prophesied a great warning to anyone who would dare even reject one word of God's message through his messenger. Now turn over to Joshua 11, just a couple more verses here before we conclude. Joshua 11 and verse 15, just to, again, emphasize how meticulous and thorough that Joshua was in his obedience to God's commands. Verse 15 of Joshua 11, it says, "As the Eternal commanded Moses, his servant, so did Moses command Joshua, and so did Joshua." See, it just passes right on down the line. God commands his servant Moses. Moses follows those commands or obeys those commands. And then those commands pass right on down to Joshua. And Joshua continued faithfully obeying those commands long after Moses had died. Long after he had died. This is what Herbert Armstrong wrote back in 1979. It says, "You have of your own will been drawn into this church by the living Christ to help me in proclaiming this good news to the world." He's writing to the members in God's church. He says to them, God brought you into this church. He said, this is the most important work in the world, especially at this crisis time, just before the coming of Christ to set up the kingdom of God. It says here, it's far more important than being a captain in an army in any time of war. If you did not agree with the military regulations and orders and openly proclaimed your dissidence, to those under you, you would be court-martialed and probably shot. Yet disagreement and contrary teaching of those under you in God's church is, in God's eyes, far more serious. He says, finally, now I'm not, of course, going to order any firing squads, but the least you can do, if you cannot wholeheartedly accept and loyally teach the truth Jesus Christ put into his church through his chosen apostle, is to resign and leave the church. You know, if you're not here to follow the instructions, why are you here? If you're not here to follow in these steps, what are you wasting your time for? He said. Now he's writing that at a time when the church had a lot of problems, a lot of dissidents that were having a lot of influence on members, even some members in the church. Listen to this again. This is Joshua 22 and verse 5. It says, "But take diligent heed to do the commandment and the law which Moses, the servant of the Eternal, charged you." This is right at the end of the book of Joshua. Presumably, I guess, toward the end of Joshua's life, and God giving him the same instructions, to walk in all his ways, to keep his commandments, to cleave unto him, and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. You see, right at the end of his life, Joshua was still, he was still telling the brethren, the Israelites, to take diligent heed to what Moses had taught. In chapter 23, verse 6, it says, "Be you therefore very courageous to keep and to do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, that you turn not aside therefrom to the right hand or to the left." Don't turn aside. Don't veer off course. Don't lose sight of that lead role in front. My father said this in Malachi's message. He said, "Remember, the book of Joshua is one of the former prophets. It has a message of prophecy for us today. It says that the leaders of the WCG and all those who follow them are headed for disaster. You can stake your life on that. In fact, you will stake your eternal life on that." That's, of course, referring to the Laodicean rebellion that happened in the years that followed Herbert Armstrong's death. They stopped following in the steps of Herbert Armstrong. They stopped following the instructions that God had given to them. Don't forget the live stream, and it looks like we had well over 100 that tuned in today, at thetrumpet.com/live, as you can see there at the bottom of your screen. Just in case we lose our channel at YouTube, we will be prepared to continue with this broadcast. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.